Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
From Learfield, this is the Buckeye Roundtable Show presented by Burger King and brought to you statewide by the American Dairy Association Mideast and COVA Insurance, Window Nation, and by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers on the Ohio State Sports Network presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics. Now, along with former OSU All-American Jim Lachey and the voice of the Buckeyes, Paul Keels, here's your host, Skip Mossick.
And hi again, everyone. Welcome into another Buckeye Roundtable show as Ohio State takes care of Michigan 27-9, gets set to face Indiana Saturday in the Big Ten Championship. 2 hours of Buckeye and college football talk ahead with former OSU All-American, NFL All-Pro Jim Lachey. How's it feel?
Feels great today. Great day to be a Buckeye, right, Skip?
Oh, absolutely. Hall of Fame broadcaster, longtime voice of the Buckeyes, Paul Keyes.
Trying for those exceptional goals like everybody, Skip.
And Hall of Fame coach, former Ohio State head coach John Cooper. Always a great night when we can talk football with Coach Cooper.
Always great being with you guys.
Coach Ryan Day will join us later this hour. Coach Cooper, you're probably the only person out there that can relate to the exhale that Ryan Day must have had after getting the W on Saturday. What's that finally moment like?
I tell you, there's nothing like it. Trust me, I've been there before. I just came from football practice.
Okay.
And the first thing I did, I went to Ryan Day, shook his hand, congratulated him on last week, and I said, I'm so happy for you. But I'm going to be honest with you, I'm more happy for your family. Mm-hmm. People don't realize what your family goes through when you lose a game. You know, I jokingly tell people I had a good neighbor. He'd take the for sale signs down before I came home. You know, but it's amazing the crap that the family takes.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be that way, but that's the reality. That's the way it's going.
And back in the day, you didn't have cell phones and everything else as far as all that kind of stuff on there. Jim, you know what it's like as a player to win and lose this game. Can you describe the emotions on both sides?
Yeah, I was 3-1 against the team up north, and that one loss still haunts me. So that's the way you take this game. You always think about what you could have done. The three victories are fantastic, my freshman, sophomore, and senior year. But, no, that's what, you know, again, a little bit different eras, but that was what it was all for. You know, and that's why you came here to Ohio State, was to get a chance to play against the team up north and compete for a Big Ten championship and a Rose Bowl berth. And that's what it was all about back then. But just happy for the team. It was a great win.
Paul, on the field, you look at the numbers. Ohio State really dominated, 419 to 163 in total yards. What was the most impressive thing Ohio State showed you on Saturday?
That they could overcome adversity. And they really hadn't had to face much, Skip, all year. But, you know, things go poorly at the beginning of the game with Jordan Marshall tearing off a couple of nice runs. Jillian Sand throws that interception, but they stay on point, and they're able to overcome those things.
Coach Cooper, what impressed you the most out of that win?
I just told Coach it when I left practice over. They have done a great job all year long, but I think particularly Saturday in the adjustment they made at halftime. I mean, we dominated that game in the second half. We ran one time like 20 plays in a row or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know whatever changes we had to make, but we out-coached Michigan Saturday afternoon.
I think the most impressive thing was how the defense didn't make adjustments, held them to -8 yards rushing in the second half after having 108 in the first half. They totally shut it down. The way that defense, you know, made their changes, made their adjustments, and then went out there and executed what the coaches asked them to do was very, very impressive.
We'll get into more of the individual breakdown next segment, but I almost hate to ask this. How long do you enjoy this knowing you have a massive game this week? I mean, 1 versus 2, that's something you don't often see this late in the year, minus a national championship game.
Well, listening to how Ryan Day has talked about all of this, they probably pretty much turned the page Sunday when they got together because they know what's coming with Indiana. You know, be careful what you wish for. And this figures to be the toughest challenge they faced all year, so they know they've got to be ready for that. As big an emotional victory as it was beating Michigan, they know they quickly have to get beyond it.
It's playoff mode now. You can't lose, right? You got to keep winning to get to that championship game, and I think that's the mode they're in right now. Some of these players on the team were involved in that last year. Young guys got to witness it. You know, we saw the travel party. You know, they brought them all. Mm-hmm. They brought out, and they'll bring some more in here in January when the new freshmen incoming that are going to sign tomorrow come in. just to sit there, to learn it, to soak it in. Julian Sain obviously benefited from that last year working under Will Howard. So now it's his opportunity. You know, he dreamed about it. He sat there and watched. Now it's his opportunity to go live out his dream. But, yeah, really the playoffs have started. Now, again, if you don't win that game, you're still going to get in the playoffs. Yeah. But you don't want to. Right, you want to take care of business,
Coach Cooper. You never had a Big Ten championship game to play in, so you know, you get the win. You can let it last a little bit longer than just Sunday before you move on.
Yeah, but regardless who you're playing, guys, if you win, you go home Sunday night and celebrate, mm-hmm. or Saturday mm-hmm. after Saturday night. And usually, you play Saturday afternoon game Saturday night and celebrate. Sunday, you come in and look at the film. Sunday night, you recruit. Monday morning, you start getting ready for the next team you're playing. I don't care who you're playing. You don't take them for granted.
Tonight's broadcast, as well as all of our Buckeye Roundtables throughout the season, are available on our flagship station's YouTube page. Simply search WBNS Radio on YouTube. You can watch it live or later. If you miss any part of it, you can also download the Buckeye Roundtable podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts, and be sure to subscribe to both. Buckeye fans, take your football game day to the next level with help from your neighborhood Giant Eagle. Stock up on your favorites from brands like Pringles, Cheez-It, and Coca-Cola, or choose from their delicious catering options. Giant Eagle is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Saturday, it's Ohio State and Indiana in the Big Ten Championship game. We'll be on the air with the AEP Energy Buckeye pregame show beginning at 6:30 p.m. Up next, our 60-second timeout as the Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
Buckeye football lives here. The Fan. This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show, presented by Burger King, where you rule. With Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper, I'm Skip Mossick. Buckeyes are known for paying it forward. That's why Buckeyes Care strives to serve the betterment of our community by positively impacting families across Ohio. Join partners American Electric Power, Donato's, Kroger, the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the James Cancer Hospital, Huntington Bank, and WBNS-TV in Columbus in supporting this cause at OhioStateBuckeyes.com/BuckeyesCare.
Buckeye Roundtable, 60-second timeout.
All right, fellas, Michigan got off to the start that they probably wanted on Saturday. Jordan Marshall really effective for them when he was in there early. But my question is, how huge was it for Ohio State's defense to limit Michigan to just a couple of field goals, down 6-0 versus down 10 or 14-0?
It's big, especially, Skip, after that interception. And, you know, while Marshall did what he did early on, you could tell after he went out at first and when he came back in the second half, he was not the same. We could see from our booth he was holding his arm a little low. Remember, they were without their other top running back. And, you know, they were also without Samaj Morgan, one of their more experienced wide receivers. So that was not a full complement of what they had. But certainly what Ohio State did defensively after that, holding them to the field goal tries, in where it could have been, as Jim had said during the game, easily 14-0 in a hole, but 6-0. Then you get another field goal from Fielding to make it 6-3, and you're within striking distance.
No, that was huge, holding the field goals. You know, it could have been a heck of a lot worse. And, you know, they were able to go to the sidelines and regroup. And then, you know, they get a couple good big plays. They get the field goal, and then the offense gives them a short field right away.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, okay, now we got to bow up. And they were able to hold them to another field goal attempt. Gives a lot of credit for putting them through the uprights. So it's 6-0, and then Ohio State was able to take it down and obviously have a long drive and tried to quarterback sneak, but it didn't quite work. But settled for a field goal there, cut it down the lead, and then obviously the rest is history. They start throwing the football all over the field.
Coach Cooper, they always say, coaches say, well, we didn't panic, but it's one thing to be down 6-0 versus 14-0 and not kind of start thinking a little bit.
You're not going to win many games in big games like that, though, guys, but it's by kicking field goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really, they kick field goals, we scored touchdowns.
Yeah, we saw that in that playoff game against Clemson, remember?
Exactly.
It may seem like an obvious question, but how much did it hurt Michigan when Marshall went out?
I think it hurt them a lot, Skip. They just, you saw with the very first couple of runs, especially that first one he had, what kind of a difference maker he could make. And Cuzdall, they've gotten more mileage out of him than they probably expected to get.
Both a walk-on, wasn't he?
Originally a walk-on. Especially, you know, he rushed for 100 yards the previous week against Maryland, but not having Jordan Marshall was big.
All right. Up next. So much talk coming into the game about the availability of Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate. The fact that both of them, as well as Brandon Innes, all had touchdowns receptions says what about that group against a pretty good Michigan defense, Jim?
They're impressive, you know, and we knew that all year long. Not having them, we had to find different ways to win. That's when the running game started kicking in and running over 200 yards. You know, they found different ways. Max Clair was able to step up. So happy during warm-ups to seeing those guys back because that makes this offense explosive. And once again, you know, they had some bombs for some big plays there. So it was really cool to see those guys come back. The work that they put in and rehab to get back and – yeah, you expect maybe a slight limp or a pad, none of that. You know, I mean, everything, they just looked like they were, you know, kind of huddled back in the stables and put them out again like, okay, now it's a good time to go run and time to make plays, and they certainly did a great job.
Not saying that anybody would, but again, we'll get into this later about how much or how little this game Saturday really means and the big scope of things, but if there's a question, do you even consider holding somebody out this week?
That's a good question. I don't know, Skip. And the only reason to say that is because it's a Big Ten championship and something that this program hasn't had since 2020. It affects your seeding. Now, there's a lot of safe guessing that the loser's still going to be in the top four in the playoff field and still get a bye. But fair question. But you kind of get the feeling, listening to the head coach, these guys won a Big Ten title.
They want to win a conference. You're right.
I get it. All right, up next, quarterback comparison. Coach Cooper, is it pretty easy to see who had the more effective game at quarterback between San and Underwood on Saturday?
Absolutely no contest. Not even close. I thought Michigan would run their quarterback a lot more than they did. I really did. I thought he's a good enough football player. You got to make the defense account for him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they did that. I think we out-coached them. I really do. I thought we had a better game plan. And the adjustments we made at halftime dominated play in the second half. I mean, Jim can probably tell us later on how many minutes we had the ball in the second half.
A bunch.
Yeah, we had a bunch.
We had a 2-1, 40-20 for the game.
That's the best defense you can play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now you got the ball.
Yep.
Yeah. They did it to us last year.
And you've seen Underwood hurt teams running the ball in crucial situations. He wasn't able to do that.
Exactly.
We all thought that was going to be part of the game plan. It's kind of misfired. And then a couple times he did slip out, got wide, was able to make some plays, but just didn't do it on a consistent basis.
Well, the other thing, guys, we've said all along, one guy's not going to cover our wide receivers.
Right.
You put one guy out there on number four or number seven, throw him in the football. Yeah. And we hit two home runs because of that. They had man coverage, and we beat them.
Yeah. All right, next thing real quick. Was anybody else concerned even a little bit after the game based on last year when Michigan's players refused to leave, guarding the midfield logo, almost daring somebody to come over?
Not as much as because of what happened last year. I think their presence there probably kept, and you could see on some of the social medias that there were a few Ohio State players that had the idea of trying to plant a flag, and the head coach and some other staff people chased them off. But I think the presence of that large number of Michigan players right there on the field probably deterred much of anything else. And you saw the Ohio State players wanted to go celebrate with the Ohio State fans.
Yeah, we're wrapping up the game, and I'm kind of watching with binoculars. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. They're starting to gather here on the midfield, right on the block M, and all of a sudden, their whole team was on the field, and you're just like, you know, is this going to get ugly again like it did last year? Certainly, I'm glad the way it was handled. Obviously, Ryan Day did a good job of talking it down and making sure Sharon Moore and he agreed to get his team off the field. Once that happened, it seemed like everything was okay.
I think both head coaches had a great job in doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, guys, great job. Up next, we'll break down what else happened this past week and around the Big Ten. Our Big Ten breakdown is next as tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show presented by Burger King, where you rule. Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper, I'm Skip Mossick. Buckeye fans power up and carbon down with AEP Energy and Eco Advantage, their 100% renewable energy plan for your home or business. Visit aepenergy.com/OSU to get started. AEP Energy, the official electricity and natural gas sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
It's time for the Buckeye Roundtable Big Ten Breakdown.
Fernando Mendoza takes the snap, hands off to, nope, he's going to keep it himself. Turns the corner, five, touchdown Indiana. And Fernando Mendoza faked the handoff and then ran it in himself. Nobody touched him.
Don Fisher on Learfield. Indiana completes a perfect regular season, pounding Purdue 56-3.
Didn't look like Purdue wanted to be out there watching that game Friday night. But you know what that game really showed, Skip, is Indiana has got the ability to be explosive in a number of different areas. Throwing the ball with the great receivers they've got. Mendoza running the ball the way he can. And Ryan Day referred to him as sneaky athletic today. But also with their running backs, with Roman Hemby and Kalon Black. So they've got multiple players that can be quick in a hurry scoring threats.
Yeah, and to make that work, their offensive line's pretty effective. Mm-hmm. You know, Carter over there at left tackle, Coogan at center, you know, guy that played at Notre Dame. So they got an offensive line that's working really hard for Indiana. Purdue, though, 18 straight Big Ten losses for the Boilermakers.
Mm. What's been the most thing you've been impressed with about Indiana, Coach Cooper?
Everything. Everything. Even from the press conference last year, the comment he made. I'll tell you, they're a well-coached football team. I don't think they have great, great players, but they have good, solid players. They don't give it. You got to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves.
No one's been able to this year. To Lincoln, where Nebraska hosted Iowa.
The 6-yard line of the Huskers. Vandersee splits wide right. Vanami's in the slot left with Jacob Gill wide of him. And Gronowski to throw. It's a quarterback draw. He goes in. Touchdown, Iowa.
Gary Dolphin on Learfield. Hawkeyes crush Nebraska 40-16.
40 points for the Iowa Hawkeyes. They seemingly have found a new offensive gear. Now, a lot of that has come with the quarterback Gronowski running the football. Mm-hmm. Will we ever see him stretch the field throwing the ball again? Back like the days of Chuck Long and Mark Vlasic.
The Hawkeyes gave up 231 yards in the first half to Nebraska. In the second half, 69. So they made some adjustments after halftime for that defense to get it done. And offense, 40 points. Are you kidding me? That's almost a team that's going to get celebrated at Iowa for centuries. They scored 40.
Yeah, really?
Coach Cooper, I know Nebraska lost their quarterback earlier in the season, but boy, did they fall big time at the tail end.
Fell big time. They're only four games in the Big Ten, 4-5. They were one of the most disappointing teams in this league. But let me say this now. You play Iowa, you better buckle that chin strap on tight and get ready to play because they're going to play hard every game, every play.
To Seattle, rivalry game as Washington hosted Oregon.
Dante ready for the ball, got it, back to throw. Pressure comes, steps up, throws down the middle, it is caught. 45-yard line, 40, down across the 30, may score. 10, 5, touchdown Oregon. Oh my gosh, how quick can that happen? That quick, that's how.
Jerry Allen on Learfield. Oregon wraps up their regular season at 11-1, beating Washington 26-14.
You know, and they still weren't at 100% with all of their key players. That's what's amazing about how offensively they can be so dangerous. And they're going to have most likely a home playoff game. So much like Ohio State did last year, you know, chance to try and get right and get things rolling before a home run. We've seen what that home crowd can be like there.
Yeah, if Jonah Coleman ends up staying there, he needs some load management. They ran him way too hard early in the year, you know, trying to get yards, trying to get stats. I think when we went there, he had like 9 touchdowns already. So he was a guy that they worked into death. And, you know, now you get in November when you need him, you know, he can't play because he's got injuries. So Washington, I think they failed at the end of the year by not recognizing, not keeping, not only could happen to anybody, but if he was healthy, they're a 10-win team.
Coach Cooper, I mean, Oregon's only blemish is to Indiana, so don't sleep on the Ducks anytime as far as where they might land in the playoff.
Oregon's got the best team money can buy.
The Coliseum is next where USC hosted UCLA.
Now McCree comes in motion, handoff to Miller. Patient running, and it pays off as he goes inside the 5, finds enough of a hole to get down to the goal line in the end zone, and a 5-yard touchdown run for King Miller, his 6th of the year, and the Trojans have the lead over Brother Bruin.
Pete Arbogast, USC Radio, Trojans roll UCLA 29-10.
You know, and they had a strange development in that game out there where their quarterback, Maeva, and I believe Mekhi Lemon did not play in the first quarter for undisclosed reasons. But, you know, USC didn't let the lingering effect of losing to Oregon, which basically knocked them out of the playoff, carry into this rivalry game. And, you know, we saw UCLA after their coaching change, how all of a sudden they caught fire for a little bit, but it seemed like the air went out of that balloon there at the end of the year big time.
I tell you, USC's better hold on to King Miller. I think he's a heck of a back. 873 yards, 7 touchdowns on the season right now. He came in with some after some guys were injured, but he's really performed all year long.
USC scored 22 points in the second half. UCLA, 0.
That's the difference.
The matchup, obviously, Saturday, the last two unbeatens going at it with Ohio State and Michigan. But could you imagine if we were still doing the leaders and legends and you have one of these teams facing USC in Indianapolis this week or someplace else? So,
Thankfully not.
To snowy Minneapolis, where Minnesota hosted Wisconsin.
Third down. We'll call it a short 5, a long 4 here. The line to gain is the 45 of Wisconsin. And it is a straight handoff right. Taylor into the secondary.
Mike Grimm on Learfield. Gophers beat the Badgers 17-7.
You know, and you saw that Minnesota struggled when they didn't have Taylor to run the ball earlier in the season. But, you know, this game pretty much was decided. Their defensive backer, linebacker, I believe, Nestor, he got a key interception that almost took it to the end zone. And, you know, P.J. Fleck just doing what he's done there in Minneapolis. 7 wins, they'll go to a bowl game. And for the most part, Gopher fans are relatively happy with it.
And they were undefeated at home.
All
7 wins were at home. So that was impressive that they were able to take care of their home turf. But you're right, 7-5, and Luke Fickell, you know, finishes the year at 4-8 there. They got to find a quarterback.
They're going to get a witch doctor to get a quarterback healthy.
Exactly. Hunter Simmons had a couple interceptions in that game. All those guys have been banged up, but they tried to fight through that season. But no bowl game again for the Badgers.
Not a good year for Coach Fickell. Can't go to a bowl game, which means you can't practice all winter.
Yep. That's a good point.
You got to get better next year, you know.
To the heart of the Big Ten, Piscataway, where bowl eligibility was on the line as Penn State was at Rutgers.
They break out of it. They've got Singleton and Allen together in the backfield. Singleton's the deep back. First and goal at the 1. Gruckemeyer into center. Turned. It's Singleton, right side, touchdown, Penn State, Nittany Lions retake the lead. They go 83 yards in 6 plays.
Steve Jones, Penn State Network, Lions beat Rutgers 40-36.
That was the kind of recipe that everybody anticipated would make them a good team, those two running backs, and having them on the field together makes for a dangerous combination. They're going to go to a bowl game. They got to find a head coach. The players are lobbying for interim coach Terry Smith. Meanwhile, Rutgers, that snaps a streak of back-to-back years with bowl games.
Yeah, what happened to Penn State defense? They gave up 533 yards to Rutgers. 338 by Cali Mactactus passing, and they had 195 rushing that they gave up. They found a way. They got it in a shootout and won.
Penn State, to me, is the most disappointing team in college football this year. I thought they would be right there with us.
And still looking for a coach.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ford Field in Detroit is next as Michigan State hosted Maryland.
Alessio takes the snap, looking left, throwing left. Blocked by Nick Marsh. Marsh at the 10, fights his way to the 5, into the end zone. Standing up, touchdown, MSU. 15-yard throw and catch and run. Alessio Milivojevic to Nick Marsh for a Spartan score.
George Blaha, Spartan Network. It took all season to get a Blaha highlight on the air. Sparty with their only Big Ten win, beating Maryland 38-28.
But think about this, Skip. The crazy recipe in all of this. They snap their Big Ten losing streak. They get a win, and they fire their head coach and immediately get Pat Fitzgerald. You know, the way it all worked out, this had to be cooking with Coach Fitz.
Oh, sure.
Before that game was even played. Now, great for Coach Pat Fitzgerald. I think the Jonathan Smith hire in the first place was one that was really raised a lot of questions, bringing him from Oregon State to East Lansing. But a guy with Big Ten background, a guy that has recruited Chicago, Ohio, and Michigan very well when he was at Northwestern, you would think the fit would be a good one. Now, the big question with Coach Fitzgerald, 4-20 his last 2 years as head coach at Northwestern.
Yeah, he's a very good football coach, I think he'll get it figured out. He had a lot of restrictions, at Northwestern as far as who he could recruit. I think he's going to open that up, and, he'll recruit Ohio hard. He'll come into Michigan. He'll go to Illinois, obviously with the Chicago ties. And, he'll go everywhere, and he'll find some guys. I think there'll be a better team in the future. But, Jonathan Smith, what, 6 games last year? He loses 2 in year 2, and he gets fired. I thought that was pretty short fuse.
Maryland and Michigan State guys won all three of their non-conference games.
Yeah.
And they won one Big Ten game.
Uh-huh. Final stop, Champaign, where Illinois hosted Northwestern.
Caden Fagan in the back from the one. Altmaier center, Arkin in motion. The Illini trying to get the lead back. Dive by Fagan over the top. He's in. Touchdown, Illinois. A 1 yard
touchdown. Brian Barnhart's on Learfield. Illini over Northwestern 2013.
You know, and Illinois was a team that people thought when the year started they could be a contender for a playoff spot. That didn't quite happen. They ran into some buzzsaws, namely earlier in the year when Indiana just took them apart pillar to post. But, you know, 8 wins for an Illini program that really had struggled to get to that point consistently. And how about Northwestern getting to bowl eligibility? I think it's the second time in 3 years when they've been basically not playing at home for real.
Yeah, and, you know, like Illinois, 10 wins last year, right? Yeah. So that was their probably goal to take that one more, and it just didn't work out. They had, you know, a schedule that didn't agree with them. They lost some games there, and I thought they fought hard. I thought they had some athletes, and it was a good scheme, you know, defensively and offensively. And, you know, Altmaier was, you know, multi-purpose type guy by the end of the year. But, you know, they didn't ask him to do a whole lot in that final game, just 136 yards passing.
Coach Cooper?
I thought they were the second most bad team in the league. I didn't put that right. But
disappointing.
Penn State was disappointing. Illinois was right behind them. I thought Illinois was going to be right there because I do think they got a good head football coach. I think they're well coached, but they didn't have a very good year.
Sets the stage for the most marquee Big Ten championship game ever between the last two unbeatens in college football, Ohio State and Indiana. We'll hear from Coach Ryan Day next as the Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
Your home for Ohio State athletics, The Fan. Listening to the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show, presented by Burger King, where you rule, with Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper. I'm Skip Mossick. Ohio State with the big win on Saturday, taking on Indiana coming up this week for the Big Ten Championship. Joined for a few minutes by Ohio State coach Ryan Day. His comments are presented by Kroger. And Coach Day, so much to be happy about for your team on Saturday. We touched on it earlier. How huge was it for your defense to keep the Wolverines out of the end zone and force the two field goals early before really limiting them to anything in the second half?
Yeah, that was big early. You know, certainly they hit the big run and then had the turnover. And, you know, for those two drives to just end in 3 points was a big victory. You know, you could see our sideline just respond and then you know, responded on offense by scoring. And then it kind of went from there. And it felt like, you know, made some really good adjustments. And then it really dominated the second half. So, you know, really good job with technique. I thought we used our hands well at the first level. Guys were really filling the holes on the second level. And you know, even in the third level, you know, Caleb came up and Jalen McClain played a physical game. So we stopped the run, which was what we had to do, certainly in those conditions and against that opponent. And then certainly, you know, really shut down the passing game.
Coach, congratulations, man. It's a proud day to be a Bucket. It was a lot of fun. Coach, I'd take you to the end of the first quarter. You know, you're down 3-6. Michigan has a ball. You decline a call, all right? You're like, hey, boom, forget it. We want you to get your third down. I'm like, okay. And your defense got to stop, force the first punt. And then you guys had the ball, and then you had a decision to make. It's 4th and 5. And, you know, just take me through your decision there on that 4th and 5 and the play call and the formation you had to get Jeremiah with that appeared to be a sluggo route.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a play that actually I felt like we were probably going to use later in the game in a spot like that. But, you know, the game didn't start the way we wanted to, and well, we didn't. I kind of felt like I had made my mind up on the third down when we called a run that we were going to go for it on fourth down, regardless of what happened, based on where we were on the field and just based, you know, kind of on how things were going. And so, you know, we put 13 personnel out there, which is 3 tight ends and one receiver, and that was Jeremiah. And so, typically, when in those spots, you know, a defense coordinator only has a few different calls. What do you throw a different grouping out there? And I think that's all the stuff that you work towards throughout the season of putting different groupings together so that you can maybe set some things up. And And so, you know, we isolated him to the field, brought a guy over, ran some spacing into the boundary, and got the coverage that we expected. You know, the corner was sitting at the sticks at 5 yards, and Jeremiah ran a beautiful route in the throw, and the protection was really good too. They picked up a twist. And so, it was a big spot in the game. But I just kind of felt like where we were on the field, where we were in the game, it was the right thing to do to go for it on fourth down.
Speaking of protection, how about the way your offensive line played in this game?
Yeah, physical. They brawled. You know, they brawled. They threw people around and executed well. And, you know, that's one great performance by them. Yeah, proud of them. And so now we know, you know, what they can do. And that was great to see. They graded out really well, all five. So, different challenge this week, completely different challenge, different style completely. But we're going to need to, you know, have the offensive line perform the way they did in this game. If we're going to go win the Big Ten championship.
Coach, I agree that everybody knows anything about football knows that you've done a great job coaching all year long, but those adjustments that you and the staff has made at halftime. Tell our fans what happens at halftime. You got these people. Got our coaches coming down out of the press box, and I know they get together and tell us all. Yep. Tell us all what happens at halftime.
Yeah, sure. So now we have these iPads, and what we do is we get in there, and we've watched a lot of the drives already on the iPads. But each position group has, their area where they're watching the film for the first half while the coaches are getting together on offense and defense and going through, you know, some adjustments. They're talking about coming out in the second half, you know, what they feel like, they need to do really to win the third quarter. And start showing the players some of the plays that, they need to. And then also just, you know, communicating with them what the plan is coming out at halftime. You know, we're not all of a sudden running new plays or anything like that, but, you know, we have to recognize, you know, what the game plan is on the other side of the ball and then communicate with them what the expectation is coming out of halftime. And that's it, you know, and try to give our guys the best chance to be successful.
Well, you've done a great job doing that all season long. Keep it up.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Coach.
Coach, looking ahead to Indiana here, you know, you look at their offense, you know, just a balance, 37 TDs passing, 29 TDs rushing, and they're both over 200 yards, 250 passing, 225, 229, something in that area, rushing the football. So what's the biggest challenge for your defense against this balanced offense with a quarterback that seems to be getting it done?
Yeah, well, it starts with the quarterback, like you say. He's really good. You know, he's smart, accurate, really gets the guys into the right play and makes very good decisions. They do a great job with their RPOs and their passing game. And then I think, you know, the running game has been excellent. You know, the offensive line does a great job with their technique, and their running backs run physical downhill. So they don't make mistakes. They don't beat themselves. And, you know, they've been very efficient all season long. And then the biggest thing is, you know, they're number one in the country in turnover margin. So they've been opportunistic on defense and taking care of the ball on offense.
Speaking of running backs, if you would talk a little bit about how your running game helped, especially when it came to manipulating the clock the way you did in the second half.
Yeah, that was big, you know, and we were, especially there in the second half when we found ourselves up by two scores and, you know, put that 20 play drive together and just, you know, felt like every time we were able to get a first down, you know, we're eating, you know, a couple minutes off the clock. And if we could make it a 3-score game, you felt like you were in pretty good shape based on how the defense was playing. And that's sort of what we were doing. It, you know, started snowing a little harder and the guys started playing even harder. And it was a group effort, you know, and receivers were involved, but, you know, the running backs, tight ends, I mean, Will just blocked his tail off and the offensive line, and Julian was tough in there, man. He led and did a great job. So I think, you know, a big part of it too is the third down conversions. You know, I think we, you know, it was as good as we've done the third down conversions. You know, it was really well done and kept those drives going and kept the clock in our favor. You know, I think time of possession is 2-1. And that's how you can control a game, especially when you have a lead.
Coach, we were going through the records and trying to come up with it, how rare this is as far as a regular season to bookend it like you did with a top three matchup to start the regular season and now a 1-2 to end the regular season. I mean, we know what's coming in the postseason, but as far as regular season, that is very unique.
Yeah, well, it's what you do at Ohio State. You know, you play in these types of games, and here we are. You know, this is you know, getting ready to play in some of these monster games, and everybody we play on, you know, from here on out is going to be, you know, some of the best teams in the country. So, you know, we got to be on our game, and you know, it's going to be the same way here on Saturday.
Coach Ryan Day, we always appreciate your time. We'll see you for your radio show on Thursday. Okay.
All right, have a good night, guys. Thanks.
Coach's comments are presented by Kroger. Kroger Pickup is the easy way to get what you want right when you need it. Try Kroger Pickup today in the Kroger app or at Kroger.com. Up next, we will hit the red zone. Longtime Ohio State reporter Tim May will join us as the Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
Your home of the Buckeyes, the Fan. It's the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show, presented by Burger King, where you rule, with Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper. I'm Skip Mossick. For every Buckeye touchdown scored this season, the Heartland Bank Community Foundation made a donation to the USO of Central and Southern Ohio, benefiting our active duty military personnel and their families. For more information or to support our troops, go to usocso.org and be the force behind the forces.
Buckeye Roundtable Red Zone.
Joined inside the red zone, longtime Ohio State reporter Tim May. Tim, so much to get into. Just wanted to pick your brain a little bit of all the coaching hires the past couple of days. In your mind, which drew the most attention from you? I mean, obviously, two involving possible CFP that have CFP aspirations.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple, but obviously the Lane Kiffin saga. Thank God that's over. This guy, you know, still hadn't won a championship or whatever. I understand people, the attraction there and what he brings, you know, in terms of attraction immediately. But, I just remember Brian Kelly went there to, you know, left a really good program and left there to win a national championship because he thought he'd have his best shot there. And it's pretty much what Lane Kiffin, you know, if you put all of his many words together, pretty much boils down to, I think I got a better shot at winning a national championship here than anywhere. But, you know, that put the snowball in motion, obviously, because everybody was waiting for this, that, and the other, even though people had contingency plans. But the Golish guy, Auburn hiring Golish from South Florida, kid who grew up in Central Ohio, I've got my eye on that one because that guy's a hell of a football coach. He's proven it, and Auburn's been so much in search of a different way of doing things, for want of another term, and I was impressed by that hire because I thought that was maybe the cagier of all the hires.
Tim, if you had to give a Ryan Day a one-year review, what would you say?
A one-year review?
Yeah, from last year to this year.
Yeah, you mean from December the 1st last year to December the 1st this year?
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
Give me that review.
I think the first three letters would be wow and then exclamation point. I mean, he's won 16 games in a row, including that's a national championship. He finally beat the number one team in the country to start the year. He beat the team his team hadn't beaten since 2019 to end the regular season. He's in the Big Ten championship game. He's going to be probably number one still in the college football playoff rankings tonight, headed into that ridiculous showdown, unbeaten's. Ohio State and Indiana on Saturday night with probably the Heisman Trophy also in the balance. I don't know how you get any better than what he has done. And then, you know, tomorrow they're going to top off a recruiting class. Of course, there are shenanigans going on all the way up to signing, right? But it looks like you're going to have another incredibly stout recruiting class. The way they've operated in the transfer portal, you know, with a few exceptions, has been par excellence. Just look at what Kaczmarek did on Saturday, and then also Max Clair just in that game against Michigan. Two tight ends they picked up in the transfer portal the last 2 years. I mean, just run them down the line. I don't know how you be much better than what Ryan Day has done.
Hey, Tim, Ohio State's number one, Indiana's number two. Who are you putting in number three?
That's a good question. I mean, I know, down the Southeastern Conference, they probably – are probably thinking Georgia might be that team now, right? I mean, with Texas A&M getting thumped, I think Texas A&M is still a really good team. But, Coach, I've been saying all along this year, nobody's playing great defense in the Southeastern Conference, and some of their offenses leave a lot to be desired. And, you know, I'm tired of kind of like talking about that. I'm just going to kind of let it play out in the playoffs. I think people are going to be – their eyes are going to be opened. I could be totally wrong. But
any of these
probably
three,
it'd be Georgia.
Any of these three lost teams have a chance to get in the playoff?
I hope not. Texas, you know, I mean, Sarkisian's making up stats saying they outgained Ohio State by 200 yards and only gave up, you know, they gave up two touchdowns. And, you know, just making, you know, they outgained Ohio State by, what 130 yards. My point is they're all just making up hyperbole to plead their case. But I don't think any team with three losses should be in the playoff. That's just my take.
Tim, back to the Lane Kiffin thing. How do you think the playoff committee on Sunday views Ole Miss?
I'm curious tonight to see how they view them. But definitely on Sunday, without your head coach and, you know, the I don't know if makeshift staff is a way of talking about it, but that's very curious. But I think they still make the playoff. You know, I think they still deserve to be in the playoff. But
and a home game, probably.
Seeding. Yeah, and a home game because they're going to draw too. But, you know, I'm very curious, like you are, Paul, in seeing how they really eyeball these guys because they've done everything it takes to be a host in the first round. But now their head coach is gone. You know, you lose your quarterback, Florida State doesn't get to go to the playoff, right? Mm-hmm. You lose your head coach. I don't know what that means.
Tim May, we always appreciate your time. Tim, we'll touch base with you later in the week, okay?
It is always a pleasure to talk with you fellas. You know that, even Coach Cooper.
Even with Coach Cooper's in here, he makes us all better, no doubt about it. And I tell you what, you look at this real quick matchup on Saturday. You know, you mentioned the playoff. I mean, this could very really be a real possibility of a future final or championship game matchup.
Absolutely.
On Saturday.
Because most likely both teams are going to get first-round byes.
Yes.
Regardless of the outcome.
So it could be. And I mean, that's what,
wow.
Man. It would be exciting.
Talk about rematches.
The Big Ten.
I mean, that's something I'm going to get with Coach Cooper next hour as far as potential, if he had the potential for rematches back in the day. And there would have been plenty of them, no doubt about it. Up next, our Encova Insurance Archie Griffin High School Player of the Week Award, our American Dairy Association Mideast Top High School Performances, and our whip around the state as we get you set for the state football championships coming up this weekend in Canton. We'll hit the sidelines with Tyler Danberg. Our insider's access tonight, we will hear from Indiana head coach Kurt Cignetti. All that and more, hour number two of Buckeye Roundtable on the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
Buckeye Roundtable, presented by Burger King, is on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show. Saturday, it's Ohio State and Indiana in the Big Ten Championship game. More on that coming up. But right now, it's time to talk some high school football.
It's time for the Encova Insurance High School Player Award on Buckeye Roundtable.
One of the highlights of the Buckeye Roundtable show is the presentation of the Encova Insurance Archie Griffin Athlete of the Week Award. During each roundtable show, Encova Insurance and the Ohio State Sports Network honor a high school athlete for their outstanding play and team leadership. And tonight's recipient has been brought up a bunch of times throughout the season, but the first one winning here, senior linebacker Sincere Johnson from Cleveland Glenville. Friday night, Johnson had 17 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, 4 TFLs, a sack, and a pair of pass breakups in Glenville's 26-21 semifinal win over Indian Valley. The Tarbledders are coached by Ted Ginn. They're 11-3 and will face Shelby for the Division IV state championship Friday morning in Canton. Again, congratulations to Sincere Johnson from Cleveland Glenville, the recipient of this week's Encova Insurance Archie Griffin High School Athlete of the Week Award. Encova Insurance, a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Time now for Buckeye Roundtable's American Dairy Association Mideast Top Performers and our whip around the state.
Ohio State commit Sincere Johnson. He's had a heck of a season. That was not the only top performance, though.
No, Cincinnati Anderson wide receiver Cooper Kathman had 11 receptions for 188 yards and a touchdown in Anderson's 29-22 win over Big Walnut.
Kirtland running back John Silvestro, 19 carries, 229 yards, 4 touchdowns, as Kirtland downed Colonel Crawford, 49-22.
Old and Tansy Orange running back Lucas Fickle had 28 carries for 106 yards, 4 touchdowns, Orange defeated Lakewood St. Ed's 28-0.
Coach Jim Tressoy's superior special teams, and Watterson had superior special teams. Their special teams blocked two punts and held on a fake punt attempt in Watterson's 41-9 win over Tippecanoe.
Shelby, quarterback and defensive back, threw for a pair of touchdowns, ran for another, and added a pick six on defense in Shelby's 42-7 win over Indian Hill. We'll get that young man's name shortly.
Avon cornerback Caden Clapham had 98-yard pick six in Avon's 38-7 win over Walsh Jesuit.
St. Henry quarterback Charlie Werling ran 23 times for 113 yards and threw for a pair of touchdowns in the St. Henry Redskins' 13-10 win over Columbus Grove.
Put a lot of emphasis on that, didn't you? Toledo Central Catholic quarterback Ali Bedoin, 11 of 20 passing, 188 yards and a pair of touchdowns in Toledo Central Catholic's 21-20 win over Cuyahoga Valley Christian Academy.
Just a mini whip tonight as we're down to the state finals. We do have a couple of reports from Northwest Ohio. Here's WNDH's Dave Kleck.
The Liberty Center Tigers are headed to a third straight championship game in D5 football after they knocked out Indian Lake in the state semis 42-10. Junior running back Garrison Cruz rushed for 160 yards and added 42 yards in receptions to lead the way. Thomas Moeller added two scores, one via pass, one via run, and Caden Kreinbrink threw for 122 and two scores in the victory. Liberty Center will battle Wheelersburg in a matchup of unbeaten Saturday night in Canton. From WNDH in Napoleon, I'm Dave Kleck.
Southern Ohio, here's WNXT's Mark Williams.
The Wheelersburg Pirates advanced to the Division 5 state championship game after a 24-10 victory over Youngstown Cardinal Mooney at Westerville Central High School Friday night. Wheelersburg senior quarterback Braylon Rucker rushed for 127 yards on 19 carries with a touchdown, and Elijah Brown had 24 carries for 111 yards rushing. The Pirates defense had four interceptions, including two in the red zone, and harassed Cardinal Mooney quarterback Vince Gentile all night long. Senior kicker Cooper Heimbach added three field goals to complete the total team win by Wheelersburg. The Pirates play the Division 5 state runner-up from last year, Liberty Center, and Saturday night at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton. Mark Williams, WNXT Radio, Portsmouth.
State championships, Jim, there is nothing like it. They begin on Thursday, Division 2, Avon and Cincinnati Anderson. Friday, three games, Division 4, Cleveland, Glenville, and Shelby at 10:30, Toledo Central Catholic and Watterson. Third year in a row for that matchup for the state title at 3. Division 1 Friday night, St. Xavier and Olentangy Orange. So some good ones there. Saturday, Division 7, St. Henry and Hillsdale. I'm sure we'll be listening to that on the way over to Indianapolis on Saturday. Division 6, Kirtland and Hopewell Loudoun, followed by the D5 final Saturday night, Wheelersburg and Liberty Center.
Braden DeVito was the young man from Shelby.
How could I forget a DeVito? That's on there. It was on the other sheet, so apologies to DeVito. Good job catching it and getting it on there.
Yeah, we're going to have to get that streamed. We're going to have to talk to the commissioner and see how we can get that streamed on our bus up to...
I can get you audio.
Yeah,
don't worry
exactly
about it.
I can get audio, too. Listen to my boys from WCSM.
No doubt about it.
Favorite segment on the show each and every week. This is always a fun segment, and now they're at the finals, right?
Yep.
I mean, we're back in August when they get this thing kicked off. We were talking about these guys week in and week out, and here they are. They've all reached that destination, and you know, just proud of all the teams that have made it, because it's not easy to do, to go through and win your region and then, you know, get an opportunity to go to state. It's, they should all feel proud. But, you know, now it's, you know, your champion or your runner up. Everybody wants to be the champion.
Coach Cooper, when you came here, I remember you telling us as far as the high school football in the state of Ohio compared to other parts in the country, said Ohio doesn't have to take a back seat to anybody.
Absolutely. I told my coaches to start at home, start right here, never overlook an in-state player. If it's close, take the player from in-state. Now, we recruited. I'm also the first coach that went real tough down in Florida and in California and Arizona. Go wherever you need to go to find them, but start at home.
Our top performers from around the state was presented by the American Dairy Association Mideast. A reminder from Ohio's dairy farmers, 8 ounces of delicious chocolate milk has 8 grams of protein with the power to fuel everyone, including Ohio State quarterback Tavian St. Clair. He's built like a Buckeye, and you can be too. Learn more at ohiostatebuckeyes.com/built. Like a Buckeye. We saw how the Big Ten shook out as far as the conference championship game. There were several others that came down to what happened on Saturday. We'll discuss after further review as the Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
The sports destination. This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show, presented by Burger King, where you rule. With Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper, I'm Skip Mossick. Join us Thursday for the Ryan Day Show. If you have a question, you can submit it to our Union Home Mortgage inbox at OhioStateBuckeyes.com. Learn more about Union Home Mortgage's 1% down payment program at UHM.com. NMLS number 2229.
Buckeye Roundtable.
Greatest play. It's under further review.
After further review.
Manning from the shotgun on third down. Arch has the snap. The sign run goes straight up the middle. First down and more. Arch breaks free. Say goodnight to this one. Arch Manning. Touchdown, Texas. The second year in a row, Manning has a rushing touchdown against the Aggies.
Craig Way on Learfield, Texas, hands A&M their first loss and keeps them out of the SEC championship, winning 27-17.
There is no question, Skip, Texas is playing better than they did at week one here in Columbus. Arch Manning is playing better than they did at week one. But with three losses, not playing in the conference championship game, and a haunting loss to Florida, Steve Sarkisian can try and sell all the swampland he wants.
He's doing his job,
yeah, but... They're in a difficult spot.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Texas A&M played so well. They went from three. Now they're down to number seven, I believe. Marcel Reed, you know, had so many great games that we talked about all year, kind of struggled a little bit in this game. And, you know, as he went, their offense went.
Coach Cooper, Texas, a little bit of a surprise. As they mentioned, the Florida loss is the one that stings.
No, absolutely no question about it. I still think they're probably a top 10 team.
Yeah.
But their record doesn't indicate that.
Meanwhile.
Arch Manning is playing better.
No question.
Staying in the SEC, Alabama could punch their ticket to the conference championship game if they could beat Auburn.
Simpson from the pistol. Did it go hard count again? No, they're going to snap it. Looking. Tie. Fires. Catch.
Chris Stewart on Learfield. Bama holds off Auburn 27-20.
I heard you guys were listening to that French broadcast when you're driving back. You know, more of a game than anybody anticipated that would be, and Alabama got a late turnover to come their way to help clinch it. But basically, the Crimson Tide are in the SEC championship game with a do-or-die game. They lose, they're out.
I don't think Alabama's playing great football, but they're playing winning football.
Yes.
You know, and that's they're finding ways to win. And, you know, they're sitting there at 10-2, looking at a playoff berth. There's nothing crazy, fantastic stat-wise jumps off about them after last week, but they're still a team that just finds a way to win, and give Kalen DeBoer credit for that.
Could they be in a position where they said thank you, but no thank you to the SEC championship game?
You would think so.
When you look at Oklahoma, where they're at right now in the East.
If there was ever a case to do it, that would be one. Yeah, that would be it.
But regardless, they're playing well right now, Coach, in Alabama.
They are. Although their record is better than it looks to me like they're playing. Mm-hmm.
To the Big 12, there was some sorting out to do there. We'll begin with Texas Tech at West Virginia.
Williams in the backfield, Douglas in motion. High snap, Morton pulls it down, throws towards the end zone. Caught, Douglas, touchdown Red Raiders. Oh, Baron Morton put it right on a line into the hands of Douglas.
Brian Jensen on Learfield, the Raiders just punish West Virginia 49-0.
You know, and Morton with three touchdowns. And think about Texas Tech now, a one-point loss to Arizona State. If it not been for that,
unbeaten.
They'd be unbeaten. And they're going to get a rematch with BYU, who they handled easily in their regular season game, but they'll face them in the Big 12 championship game.
Jacob Rodriguez for A&M, our Red Rangers, Texas Tech. You know, he's made some plays all year long, get a rushing touchdown in this game. He's that linebacker that can do a little bit of everything.
You mentioned BYU, Paul. Could they hold their own as they hosted UCF?
Fourth and three at the UCF 46. Got to get to the 43. They load the backfield. They now vacate Parker. Bear will set to throw, and he throws complete. Kingston, the 30, the 20, 10, 5, touchdown, Parker Kingston.
Greg Rubel, BYU Radio Cougars beat UCF 41-21.
Rack up over 400 yards of offense and hold their opponent to just 42 yards, Central Florida rushing the football. So And you got to think they're motivated to see Texas Tech again.
No doubt.
Yeah, they're doing everything they can to keep their coach, Shiitake, stay there. I mean,
it sounds like he's going to stay.
And that's great because, you know, that's where he belongs. He's a former Cougar, and I think he's doing a heck of a job with this team. They're a fun team to watch.
What's John Cooper doing if you're coaching right now and all these other people are coming at you right now? Your team's playing in meaningful games at the end, but they're calling you saying, hey, coach, we want to talk.
I'm going to tell my wife to tell him I'm not home. I don't want to talk to
him.
I've got more important things. Yeah.
The ACC is next. Man, what a puzzle to figure out. We'll begin with Virginia hosting Virginia Tech.
Second and goal for Virginia. They bring in the jumbo unit. Direct snap to Taylor. Drives to his left. Lowers his shoulder towards the goal line. And he's in! Touchdown, Virginia! The Hoos light the fuse! And they strike first on their rivals.
John Freeman on Virginia Network. Cavaliers beat Va Tech 27-7.
I'll tell you what, Tony Elliott, when you think about what he's done over a multi-year period, getting that Virginia team, to where they are right now. Remember, they had that tragedy on their campus with football players and athletes, students that were killed. He's done a whale of a job, and his absence is being felt at Clemson.
No question about it. He's a heck of a football coach. You know, obviously in-state rival-type game at the end of the year, and give the Cavaliers credit for finishing a pretty successful season, sitting there at 10-2.
Virginia Tech guys is getting what they deserve. And weren't they one of the first teams to fire their football coach?
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
After about the third game of the year.
Yeah.
We haven't had a chance to ask you, Coach, in the last couple of weeks. So what do you think about them hiring James Franklin, Va Tech?
I think he's a good football coach. I think he needs to do a little better job with his offense. I think you just don't play. You know, you got to score points to win games. I don't think they do that.
Staying in the ACC, Pittsburgh had a chance as they hosted Miami.
Second down and three. Only thing that remains for Miami is Beck's going to throw. And he fires for the end zone. And it is caught for a touchdown. What a catch by Daniels. What an exclamation point to the season. What a closing argument. It's a touchdown. It's Miami 37 and Pittsburgh 7.
Joe Zagacki, Hurricane Network, Miami just rolls Pitt 38-7. Your final.
They had a chance before the bus doors opened. You know, Miami, you know, Carson Beck, three touchdowns. You know, he played a good game. But Miami's in that strange position. Here they are with two losses, not playing in their conference championship game, a win over Notre Dame, who will probably, you know, at least in the poll came out, Miami now is 12th in tonight's poll. Notre Dame is 10th. And nobody can argue that Notre Dame's not playing good football, but head-to-head's got to mean something, and Miami might get the short end of this.
How about Malachi Toney, the wide receiver, 13 receptions in that game. He was all over the field. Pittsburgh still hasn't got a man on him.
SMU had a chance if they could win at Cal.
DeJesus motion stops off the right side of the line. Handoff to Raphael. Bounces out to the left. Tries to reach for the pylon. Wrestle to the turf. He's in! Got the ball over the plane! Touchdown!
Justin Allegri on Learfield. Cal with the upset of SMU 38-35. So now you have Virginia and Duke Saturday night.
I know. Jerron Kiwe Sagapotele, quarterback for Cal. Four touchdown passes in that football game. You know, they're playing with a coaching change having occurred. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you mentioned it, Skip. Should Duke win the ACC championship game? It's conceivable the ACC could be closed out of the playoff.
Yeah. In Riverboat Ron Rivera, the general manager.
Whatever they call it, Emperor, yeah.
He pulled the plug on the coach, and the Golden Bears didn't care. They came back and got a nice upset victory over SMU.
Coach Cooper, that's wild. Everything comes down to the last weekend like that. You got teams getting upset like you wouldn't believe.
Well, we ought to take the best team, not the team that's got the best record, the best teams. Right.
Not necessarily conference champions either. To the American, though, Tulane trying to stay in the mix as they hosted Charlotte.
Breaking the huddle, I formation behind Retzloff under center. Turning the give, the fullback, Javen Gordon, dives across the goal line. No signal yet. Touchdown, Tulane. That was a hot knife through butter.
Corey Glora on Learfield. Tulane over Charlotte 27-0. So we have Tulane and North Texas Friday for the American.
And, you know, and here's Tulane with all the noise surrounding John Summerall, their coach who's now going to Florida. But they continue to play at a high level. Retzlaff did not have his best game. Threw two interceptions. A young man that transferred from BYU to get there. But it'll be interesting because, if I'm not mistaken, Skip, didn't North Texas lose their head coach to somebody too? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. The lame duck bowl.
The Charlotte 49ers, yes. 1-11.
They're probably looking for a new head coach.
Yeah.
They just got one.
I know. Oh, they just got one. Okay.
We end, fellas, with Notre Dame. The Irish closed the season at Stanford.
James Rendell will come on to punt, averaging 44.5 yards per punt this year. He's only punted 22 times compared to 50 times last year in the run. Of the Irish fake it. Oh, it's a beautiful fake. It's complete across the 40. Now a man to beat down the far sideline. 40, 30, 20, 10. It's a touchdown. Luke Talich scores on special teams. 84-yard fake punt. And the Irish have scored again.
Tony Simeone, Notre Dame Network Irish roll over Stanford 49-20.
So here sits Notre Dame, playing some of the best football of anybody in the country. Lost their first two games, one of whom to Miami, who they're ranked ahead of in the college football playoff poll. Not playing, not getting the extra data point for playing a conference championship game because they're not a real member of a conference.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like playing poker with a pinochle deck, isn't it?
I know. Sitting there at 10-2. What were they in the latest poll? I thought number 10.
They were 10, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, with the two conference champions being 11-12, there's no room to fall. But they're not going anywhere, right? They don't play any more games. They'll just have to sit and let things shake out. But they'll probably be a playoff team.
They got the best running back in college football.
No question.
No doubt about it. And, Paul, I get what you're saying. Head-to-head has to matter, and I believe it does. But I believe so do bad losses at the same time as well. And that's what
and it was early. You know, those old early losses, you can get over them.
But Miami looked terrible in their losses.
They did, yes. Had, so. Agreed.
All right, up next we will hit the sidelines. We'll put one final finishing touch on Ohio State's win over Michigan. That is next as the Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
You're listening to the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show presented by Burger King, where you rule, with Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper in with us tonight. I'm Skip Mossick. The 2026 Buckeye Cruise for Cancer set sail on the Silver Sea Silver Ray. It's an intimate ship with an even better experience, all inclusive of beverages, shore excursions, taxes, and gratuities. Sailing from Fort Lauderdale to bucket list ports like the Grand Turk, St. Martin, and St. Thomas with many former Buckeye greats. Call 614-792-6204 to book today.
This is the Elk and Elk Report on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Jim, so many position groups to call out for Ohio State from Saturday, but how about, I know you're going to hate this, but how about the O-line and their performance on Saturday? I mean, it was really spectacular.
You know, after we watched that game, I thought, man, all right, they're doing it. Yeah, they're doing it. Yeah, boom, knockdowns. You know, every position I thought played well. They didn't rotate. You know, it was the first game we didn't rotate it to right guard. Tegger went the whole game and had a heck of a ball game. So hats off to that group, Coach Tyler Bowen, Marcus Johnson, Charlie Dickey. They did a great job preparing those guys to go out there and play physical. And as Coach Day kind of was kidding there, hey, you see it once on film, I expect it every time. And that's the expectation. What they did of that game, they got to do that for every game now throughout the playoffs.
Got sacked one time, didn't
no,
he?
No.
No pressures.
O-line played great. Our 2-Deep report was presented by Elk and Elk. Serious fans of Ohio State Athletics, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Go Buckeyes.
Now for Buckeye Roundtables from the Sidelines Report on the Ohio State Sports Network.
Well, speaking of up front, the O-line played great, but no doubt the Buckeye defensive line played great on Saturday as well, with the key holding Michigan out of the end zone and limiting them to just 163 yards. After the game, Tyler Danberg with defensive lineman Caden Curry.
Caden, you've got this big smile on your face. When did you start smiling for the first time today?
Not until that pick in the fourth quarter, man. I mean, anything can happen in games like this. We all knew that, and we just had to keep our poise and just keep playing our football, and that's what we did.
when Davis and Igbinosin had the interception, how would you describe the defense's reaction in that moment?
I mean, obviously all of us were really excited, and we kind of knew what was coming, but we always knew we had to keep a smart game, and we knew they were going to get chippy, and we just want to play the next one.
A pair of gold pants is going home to Greenwood, Indiana. What does that mean to you?
Feels great. I mean, obviously it's my first pair, so I mean, something I'll give to my mom and I'll cherish forever, and I mean, just get ready for next week.
What was the locker room scene like after?
Special, man. It'll be a moment I'll always remember. And just seeing the smile on Coach Day's face, I mean, this game was really for him, too, because we know what he's gone through. And just us players gone through, and it just feels good to get one back.
What does Coach Day mean to you and mean to this team?
I mean, he's changed really my whole life and just my perspective of how I go about things. And he's definitely something I die for out in that field. And he's someone I respect really much.
What has he done to change your life in those ways?
Just the way I am outside of football, the way I am mentally, and just the man I am today. I mean, it's just so many things that I can't really get detailed in one little thing.
What makes you guys hungry for more?
I mean, obviously we got way more to do, and I haven't played in the Big Ten Championship since I've been here either, so we still got more to do, and we just got to keep fighting day by day.
What's it going to be like to go back home to Indiana to play in a game like that against IU?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, going back home, playing them, I mean, I was heavily recruited by Indiana, so just seeing a bunch of guys that I played against there in high school, and only being, my house is only like 20 minutes away from Lucas Oil, so it'll definitely be exciting, and it'll definitely be one to get after.
Caden Curry with our Tyler Danberg. It goes without question, fellas, that, Paul, that defense, that we'll need to continue its great play against what's been a tremendous offense from Indiana.
This will be the toughest offense they will see all year, because when you think about it, not only what Mendoza can do himself throwing the ball, and he's got really three good receivers. Charlie Becker stepped up and played big while Surratt was out and injured, and Omar Cooper has shown what he can do. But their running backs, Hemby and Kalen Black, they've shown they can be game-breaking type of players. So Indiana's got a multi-pronged threat.
And then on defense, you know, Aiden Fisher, the linebacker, he's been playing well. D'Angelo Pounds, a cornerback, has had a really, really good year. And again, he's not the biggest guy, but he plays big.
And Daly on the defensive line.
Daly, very good. You know, Mikhail Kamari, you know, I think he's another guy that has been impressive. So they got some guys that can go after you and get it done. So both sides of the ball are going to have to play well.
Coach Cooper, Indiana had some success when you were coaching with Bill Mallory there as head coach, but this is a far cry from anything that they've been at before.
Yeah, the year we went to the Rose Bowl, we had to beat them over there, and really a tough ballgame. I had great respect for Bill Mallory. It's a shame he's not in the College Hall of Fame. I used to be president of the Coaches Association, and I tried to work real hard. He should have been in the Hall of Fame. But no, to answer your question, no, they are extremely well coached now. I think the difference for this, between Indiana now and back in the day I'm talking about, is Indiana's quarterback can beat you running the football.
He
can also run the ball. Now he can throw it, but he can also run the ball. So I think our defense has got to play the best game they've played so far this year.
Quite a turnaround under Coach Cignetti. We will hear comments from Coach. That's coming up next as the Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show presented by Burger King, where you rule with Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper in with us tonight. I'm Skip Mossick. Saturday, Ohio State limited Michigan to 1-of-1 scoring on trips inside the 20. This defensive summary is brought to you by Anduril, whose mission is to transform U.S. military capabilities through advanced technology. Anduril, an official sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Buckeye Roundtable Insiders.
Ohio State and Indiana Saturday for the Big Ten Championship. Both teams, the last two as far as unbeatens. Chance to hear some comments now from Indiana coach Kurt Cignetti. We'll start with what he learned from last year's game here at Ohio State.
While that was not an enjoyable experience, it was an experience that was necessary for our growth and development to go into a hostile environment like Ohio State and play a team of that quality. You know, we got off to a decent start, but then after that, it was pretty much all Ohio State. And, you know, we were able to add some key pieces to this year's team, some veterans that had played a lot of football, been in those environments. And I think the guys that returned, you know, from last year's team learned a lot from Ohio State and Notre Dame, which helped us. So after, you know, we were able to, when we played Illinois, they were 9 in the country, played them at home, played really well, won decisively, but then went to Iowa, really difficult place to play. And I think a very underrated football team. And that game went down to the wire, pulled it out at the end. Obviously, Oregon was 2 or 3 in the country at the time we played. They were playing as well as anybody in America. And that was a big moment. We had to prove we could go on the road and beat a team of that caliber. And, you know, we played fairly well, and it was a good win. You know, even Penn State, I realized they were having a down year, but since Terry took over, you know, they were playing with kind of a renewed energy. And they took control the second half when we failed to put them away when we had the opportunity and had all the momentum in the world. And to come back and win like that on a 2-minute drive was a great thing for, I think, our football team. So I think we've learned a lot since the last time we played. We respect Ohio State. I mean, they're a great football team. What they've done speaks for itself. And we understand that we're going to have to play really well Saturday night.
Probably not fair to compare last year's team to this year's team as far as, you know, comparable as far as facing Ohio State a year ago, Paul. But no doubt about it, what Coach Cignetti said about overcoming the adversity that they faced this year in tight ballgames.
Well, and, you know, he mentioned when they lost their playoff game last year to Notre Dame that that game and the Ohio State game last year were the most physical games that they had played. But here's I think Coach Cooper might have mentioned it earlier. One of the things that Kurt Cignetti and his staff have done, both last year and this year, is great recognition of talent that they've recruited and added and brought in by transfers or recruiting. And, you know, they've just, you know, they had Curtis Rourke at quarterback, who had a very good year last year. But there's no question that Fernando has been a massive upgrade.
When you start taking a look as far as what's to come, you know, I mentioned earlier as far as if guys aren't feeling well, you know, hold them back, hold them out for the playoff. Coach Cignetti says, no. This game is every bit as important as a playoff game.
Well, I don't think there's much balance there. You know, we're treating this like a one-game season. It's the next opponent. If we get done what we want to get done, you know, we won't play again for 30 days. And there'll be plenty of time to recover from our bumps and bruises, et cetera. Either way, coming out of this game, there will be a response to how you played and the result in preparation for the next opponent. But this game means an awful lot. It's a Big Ten championship. It's a great conference. We've never had the opportunity to play in this game, let alone be the Big Ten champ. And we're playing a great opponent. So all eyes and focus are in preparation toward this game.
Coach saying the right thing, Jim. But at the same time, a lot of people saying no matter what happens on Saturday, both of these the odds of both of these teams getting a bye are pretty good. So it's like you didn't have to win Saturday to get the 30 days off.
It's not a season ending.
Right.
You know, it's not. It's a step. And, you know, but it's a very important step and something you want to take care of. You know, you want to make sure when you get an opportunity, because championship seasons don't come along very often. You know, I mean, we were fortunate last year, but we didn't win the Big Ten. And this would be an opportunity for these guys to kind of write their own history, to be a team that beat Michigan, to beat a Big Ten champion, and then to be a national championship. That would, you know, go down as the greatest team in the history of the program if they could accomplish that. So this is a step along the way to that goal.
I know he coaches James Madison, right? Mm-hmm. But didn't he also coach down at Alabama?
Yes, he did. Wide receiver coach, yeah. Recruiting coordinator. He's done a little bit of everything. He's got a lot of respect. I know of some of the coaches I talked to, you know, just his X and O's and what he demands from his staff and ability to identify the talent, what Paul was talking about, but then develop it, too, to turn them into good football players. And, you know, he's got good people on his staff.
Will he be the coach of the year again this year?
Probably.
Probably.
One of them.
And he should be.
I know exactly. Yeah. I know. Coach Cignetti on Ohio State's offense, he says he knows it's a very good one.
It always starts with the quarterback. And obviously, Julian Sand is a tremendous football player. He's young, but doesn't play like he's young. I mean, he's got super quick release, very accurate, and he's mobile. They've got great weapons on the outside. Jeremiah Smith is probably the most dominant player in college football, if not Caleb Downs or the other receiver, 17, Carnell Tate. So they've got weapons in the air to make explosive plays, but they're committed to the run. as well. And the offensive line does a great job, as well as the tight ends. And, you know, Bo Jackson and the other running backs have been running really well. So they're fully dimensional. They can beat you a number of different ways. And, you know, sometimes when you watch Ohio State, the game is in hand. And I know Ryan is banking on playing a really long season, and they huddle, and they're not interested in running a lot of plays on offense. And it, sometimes when you watch them, it's almost like they're holding back a little bit. But they're super explosive, capable of scoring from any point on the field at any time.
You take a look at both of these teams' offenses, they're both pretty good. I mean, they're both really good. Does it come down to, in your mind, who plays better defense on Saturday?
Well, and they're both defenses are very, very good, too. No question. And remember what flipped this game last year? A punt return for a touchdown by Caleb Downs.
80 yards.
Yeah, that was incredible. Special teams.
Yeah, and that's always going to be key in all these games. But I think you're right, Skip. Both these offenses are very good. How are the defenses going to match up? Can Ohio State expose Indiana's defense? Can Indiana's offense, you know, find a hole in Matt Patricia and the Buckeye defense? You know, that's what's going to come down to, and that's what they're preparing for right now.
I think it's going to be a great game. Both teams have got great players. I think we're going to win the game. I think our tight ends are better than their tight ends.
That's true.
Coach Cignetti talked about Julian Sain a few minutes ago. Now he talks about his quarterback, the development of his quarterback, Fernando Mendoza.
You know, when we got him, obviously was highly aware of him. We have his younger brother. And when he came to us, he needed some work in the pocket, footwork, patience, processing. Saw him make a big jump the last week of spring and another big jump the last 2 weeks of fall camp. But I think it was probably after the second or third game of the year where you could really see him start to get comfortable in the pocket, make the plays. And since the Illinois game, you know, he's been outstanding. Now, are there's still some times you could make a cut up and say, oh, you got a little too antsy here or there. And I think the cold weather bothered him a little bit against Purdue, to be quite honest with you. You know, he's from Miami. He's never played in that kind of weather before. But, you know, he's a great leader. He's a great person, highly intelligent. He wants to be a great player. And Tom Brady is his idol, and I've never seen a guy put the time in and prepare like he does. You know, he'll be ready to go Saturday. You know, my big thing is I just want him to focus in on the process so that he can play the best he can Saturday night for the Indiana Hoosiers and nothing else.
I give Coach Cignetti and his staff more credit than most as far as just – recognizing what was available there, because had anybody else in the country had any inkling how good Mendoza was going to be this year, I think they would have been jumping all over him.
No question. And obviously the fact that his younger brother was part of their recruiting process had a lot to do with that. But, you know, you think about, they had Curtis Work last year. Mm-hmm. Great recognition of that talent, plugging him in. But I think the key also was getting those two receivers back, Cooper and Surratt. Having what they've got. Black was there last year as a running back, but he wasn't their main guy. But having the pieces around, allowing Mendoza to grow into what he's become.
Coming up, we will wrap things up again. More preview of Ohio State, Indiana with some chalk talk. That is next as the Buckeye Roundtable show continues.
You're listening to the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State athletics.
Welcome back, everyone, into tonight's Buckeye Roundtable show with Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, Coach John Cooper. It is always a treat to spend Monday nights, Tuesday nights as well with Coach John Cooper down here on Buckeye Roundtable. We are proudly presented by Burger King. Visit your local BK restaurant to grab your $10 O Fry O bundle. That includes a medium fry, 8-piece chicken fries, 8-piece mozzarella fries, 8-piece chicken nuggets, and a custom OSU crown, all for just $10 at your local Burger King.
Ooh. Buckeye Roundtable. Chalk Talk.
Allen food. Like
flame broiled.
Yeah. Delivery of the game, Ohio State and Indiana for the Big Ten Championship on Saturday. Delivery, who needs to deliver for Ohio State to get the win?
Defense again, to try and throttle down what Indiana's been able to do on offense, because they've been able to do a lot.
I think it's going to be our line of scrimmages, offense, defensive line, both of those guys, both those units coming off great performances against Michigan. That has to be duplicated this week and then throughout the playoffs. So I'm going to go with the offensive line. If they dominate like they did, you know, if, like Coach Cooper said earlier, if you hold the ball, the other team can't score. So, you know, we had it 40 minutes last game. I think Ryan Day would like to play that similar scenario, keep Indiana's offense over there in the sidelines. They can't score points if they're not playing.
I agree with you 1,000%. In fact, if our quarterback has time to set in the pocket, throw the football, and not without getting sacked, we're going to win the game.
I know they both played last week, but any lingering concern about Smith and or Tate?
No.
No, they look good in warm-ups. They look good throughout the whole experience of Michigan. You know, both of those guys made long plays. You know, 50-yarder for Carnell Tate, so whatever's on him looks to be fine. And same with Jeremiah. I'm sure there's still soreness. Those guys worked really hard to rehab, to get back, and you know they had this game earmarked and they're back, and you know obviously playing indoors now, Big Ten championship game, I'm sure that that'll make them feel a little bit better than being out in the cold November air.
Biggest threat from
December.
biggest threat from the Hoosier offense versus Ohio State's defense is what? We talk about the quarterback a bunch. Is that it or is there more?
No, and Indiana I think leads the nation in running the ball.
229 a game.
Yeah, almost 300 yards a game.
Yeah, but their receivers are, I think Cooper and Surratt are dangerous, dangerous threats. Now
we're going to have to double cover them?
I'm not sure about that, Coach. I mean, you know, you say all of that, and we're talking about Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate,
yeah, exactly,
too.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think they're impressive.
The most important thing is the game. We get it. The game's the most important thing on Saturday. But is this a Heisman showdown?
I think it is. Certainly think it is when you talk about what these two young men have done. And, you know, Love from Notre Dame's not playing this weekend. Mm-hmm. So, and neither is Pavia from Vanderbilt, if you believe he is a serious candidate. So, it very well could
be.
They
both are, yeah, I think so.
Well, both these guys are top three, top five candidates, right, for the Heisman.
No doubt.
So, certainly that's going to play into this. You know, whoever wins and plays better, and, you know, obviously, I don't think you could throw for 500 and lose, right? So, I mean, it's hard to have a...
Didn't Dave Wilson do that?
Yeah. It's hard to have one of those games where, you know, you threw
so
all those yards and then you lose a game. You know, you don't get it on stats. I think the winner of this game has a good shot at winning the Heisman.
Indiana has done so much the last 2 years. Is there any chance that there are still any non-believers out there of Indiana after all they've done?
You know, there probably are. Maybe Purdue fans. But, no, you know, you think about also what they've done, the way they've sold out their stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, we're used to...
it's Indiana. So,
Coach Cooper, you remember when your teams would go over there, it'd be sold out because it was Ohio State fans.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but
exactly.
I think that people that are Indiana fans have become believers. They're starved for it. They were so hungry for it. And, you know, now that it's been done a second year in a row, has a
everybody's
lot to do with it.
Everybody's probably wondering why they're not trying to hire that coach from Indiana.
Right. You know,
long way from dark day one and dark day two. Real quick, Coach Cooper, had there been a Big Ten championship game when you were coaching, here's what I came up with. 92, rematch with Michigan. 93, Wisconsin. 94, rematch with Penn State. 95 would have been a butt-kicking against Northwestern. 96 would have been another butt-kicking against Northwestern. 97, rematch with Michigan. 98 versus Wisconsin. Do you wish you would have had a conference championship
game? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We lost one game and we're out of it.
I know.
Our 96 team, I'm going to tell you, I'll brag a little bit. 96 team and 98 team are as good a football team as you're going to see here.
96, you won it. But, you didn't play Northwestern either of those 2 years. They're getting all the love in the world. Now it's just Player of the Week award. They get all the love every week. Real quick, Buckeyes in the NFL.
Speaking of love, I'm going to just love some Ohio State offensive linemen in recognition of the effort that our offensive line gave against Michigan last week. How about Paris Johnson with the Cardinals? Donovan Jackson, he's been banged up a little bit, but he's with the Vikings. Josh Freier has one start with the Cardinals. He's played in 7 games. Josh Myers with the Jets at center. He's been doing a great job throughout his career, and now he's with the Jets, suffering through that. Taylor Decker with the Lions over at left tackle, still battling along. Luke Whippler, we know him. Mm-hmm. He's up at Cleveland with the Browns. Josh Simmons, boom, got hurt a little bit that last game, so we'll see who he is. And obviously, Thayer Munford got to play a little bit, and DeJuan Jones is on IR.
Coach John Cooper, thank you so much for coming down and joining us again this season. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Guys, great job. We'll see you over there on Saturday, okay? Shrimp cocktails all around.
See you Thursday, too. How about Thursday?
We'll see you Thursday before then. Buckeye Roundtable presented by Burger King has been brought to you statewide by Encova Insurance, by the American Dairy Association Mideast, Window Nation, and by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers. For our producer tonight, Colin Berenger, and for Jim Lachey, Paul Keels, and Coach John Cooper, I'm Skip Mossick. As always, thank you for listening. From Learfield, this is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.